It's the 2015 WGN NFL Draft Roundtable with WGN's very own Adam Ho, featuring the Tribune's Dan Wiederer and the Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
I like this kind of party!
Now, here's your host, Adam Ho.
Welcome in. This is the NFL Draft Roundtable here at WGN. I'm Adam Hogue, and excited to get going here as we talk to three of the guys on the Bears beat that are going to know, well, do know everything there is to know about the Bears and the NFL Draft as it fast approaches. Adam Johns is here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hello, Adam.
Good to be here again.
Dan Wiederer from the Chicago Tribune.
Hello.
And Kevin Fishbane from ChicagoFootball.com.
Hello.
Hey, guys. This draft is fast approaching. It's fun that it's here in Chicago. And I don't know how much that really changes things from our standpoint as we look forward to who the Bears will pick and what's actually going to happen as the draft comes. But it sort of just makes it more of an event here, I think.
I think I may spend one day downtown kind of making my way through all the madness. You got to check it out. The draft's in town. It's been in New York forever. Usually don't go to it. Might as well check it out since it's downtown.
Yeah. A lot of pomp and circumstance, obviously. It's obviously one of the most hyped events of the NFL offseason, and obviously a draft that's critical for where the Bears are going to get this thing pointed in the years to come, so we'll see what happens on that front.
I shouldn't be surprised by it, but maybe I'm a little cynical. It's still amazing to me that Bears fans, NFL fans, are traveling to Chicago. I mean, they're making trips and vacations. I've talked to families that have, you know, booked hotels downtown for the weekend, that they're going to spend the weekend hanging out in Grant Park watching the draft. I just hope the weather's good.
I think it's cool how they've made it more accessible to the fan. There's, with this whole draft town that's free, that's really all you need. You don't really need to go in the auditorium. I know they have tickets that they gave away for the actual auditorium, but it sounds like if you're in draft town, which is a free event, there's always going to be stuff to do, and you'll still have some access to the players and the teams as they're around there
Yeah, the auditorium is actually pretty small, I believe, and you got to set up all those draft tables and make sure every team is represented in there. Then you got the NFL Network and ESPN there, so it's going to be tight. So they had to make something bigger if Chicago doesn't get it, and they're shutting down, seems like, half the city to make this work for them.
Did you guys make anything of the fact that the top two guys are not coming?
Well, it obviously takes away a little bit of the flair that the NFL would like to have. It makes Roger Goodell wait a little longer to give that first big man hug that he likes to give to the players when they get drafted. But, Adam, you said, I think, the three key words about draft town: three, stuff to do. And obviously, during a draft, you need stuff to do. Yeah. Because after the initial wave of excitement of those top 10 picks, the draft can get pretty tedious and pretty monotonous really quick as you're going through the lower tiers of guys and the rounds and rounds and rounds of teams and players that you don't really care about, and so you have to have stuff to do to really enjoy the experience.
Well, I know Kevin's gonna be counting down to that Philip Phillips concert.
Yeah, that's no question
on that Saturday night.
Big fan.
If you don't follow these guys on Twitter, you should. Adam Johns is at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Dan Wiederer is at Dan Wiederer, W-I-E-D-E-R-E-R. And Kevin Fishbane is at K Fishbane, spelled how it sounds. I don't think I need to spell yours out, Kevin. And I'm at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E. Let's dive into the Bears and what we might be seeing. I know, you know, no one really knows what's going to happen in the draft, but we've all been covering this thing since January. We know what the Bears' needs are, and we can certainly look at a few of these guys who we think the Bears could be looking at with the 7th overall pick. One of the first things Ryan Pace said in January when he came aboard was he talked about the idea of being able to take the best player available on their draft board at number 7. Do you think that is something he'll actually stick to? Or, knowing John Fox's history on defense and his history drafting defensive players relatively successfully too, do you think they'll stick to defense in the first round?
I still think they lean towards defense. Again, yeah, make a good point there. John Fox, throughout his history, whether it's with the Broncos or with the Panthers, has leaned towards defensive players. And look, Ryan Pace has installed, guys, as we all know, a new evaluating system here. So just because these analysts or these pundits have a Kevin White higher than a Landon Collins or Danny Shelton doesn't mean it's going to be the same for the Bears. So if they stick to their boards and, say, a Danny Shelton ranks higher than an Amari Cooper or somebody, a receiver that they're always being linked to, I think they should you know, go with their best player available according to their own rankings.
Here's the thing. When you have a top 10 pick, you cannot afford to whiff on that pick. So you have to find the surest thing that's on your board at the time you come up. Now, what happens picks 1 through 6 is going to greatly impact what the Bears have available to them. And sometimes a player that you didn't expect to be there is suddenly available when you pick. And if that's a guy you believe in and you think is a special player, you pull the trigger. So I think in round one, it's very, very critical for Ryan Pace to go ahead and find the best player that's available when they go on the clock, because they can't afford to whiff on this. They've got needs across the roster. Obviously, their defense needs to be rebuilt. But say an Amari Cooper's there, and you look at a guy who can maybe take this offense up a level, now all of a sudden you've got to consider that. So I think that the best player available philosophy, which Ryan Pace put on record as his philosophy, has to be put into effect when they go on the clock on Thursday night.
And I think you make a good point about the teams picking in front of them. We got to remember Washington and the Jets, two teams that make some weird decisions in general. I know they got both have new GMs, but you always got to wonder as a wild card there. And I know we're going to talk about Marcus Mariota, but he's maybe the ultimate wild card. And whoever takes him and at what position is going to ultimately affect the Bears pick. But they're in a really good situation. And that happens when you're a bad team with a lot of needs and you have a top 10 pick. I don't want to say it's hard for them to go wrong, because they could pick somebody that we all agree is a great pick, and then 3 years later, he's a bust. No one really knows, but when you look at the way the board is falling based on all these different rankings, there's a lot of good players that are, you know, going to be day one starters and would fill a need for the Bears.
And Kevin, I think this is one of those strange drafts where there's not a real lock or consensus of what's going to happen with each of those six teams above them. All those teams could go in a different direction, and really you have to have plan A, B, C, D, E, F, and G ready to go, because this thing could twist and turn in some weird places.
And there's a lot of questions with some of these guys, namely Jameis Winston. How much of this has been, it seems to be a foregone conclusion that Tampa's taken him first overall, and yet you hear so many other people around the NFL that wouldn't touch this guy, and I know we all have our opinions on this guy as well. We'll get into some of that specifically with Jameis later on in this roundtable, and later on, we'll also simulate the first round. I assigned 8 teams to all of you guys, and we're going to go through this thing and actually simulate a mock draft in how this first round could play out. Because no one really knows. Kevin, you mentioned the needs that the Bears have. I'll ask each of you, and Kevin, we'll start with you. If you had to rank the top 3 positions of need for this team, this Chicago Bears team, and there's a ton of them, but if you had to rank them as top order down, your top 3, where would you start?
Yeah, this was really tough. And again, it speaks to all the needs. I went defensive line first, just looking at who they have right now, because you have guys on 1-year deals. You have a older Jeremiah Ratliff. We don't know how a lot of these guys fit. We really don't know. And part of the problem that we haven't met Vic Fangio, we don't know what he wants out of his 3-down lineman. We've all made our guesses based on what San Francisco does. But I put D lineman there, not because I think they'll pick 1-7. It all depends on how the board falls. But I think that's just a huge need, because they need bodies there. Wide receiver, kind of the same thing. They need bodies. They need guys to play that position. Is Alshon Jeffrey number one? If he is, who's his number two? Do you find your number one wide receiver? And then linebacker, because how's John Bostic fit? How's Christian Jones fit? I've seen so many fans say, oh, they don't need an edge rusher. They don't have a 3-4 outside linebacker outside Pernell McPhee on this team. So I think those three and any other position I could probably easily move in there, because they're all pretty big needs.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is one of those questions that you can't have a wrong answer to, because they have needs at every single position on the depth chart. And I think linebacker is one that I would put at the top, just because, as you mentioned, you don't know how any of these guys fit, and you don't know how productive these guys are as NFL players. John Bostic, Christian Jones, they've had flashes. Shea McClellan is going to be making another move to a new position. There's not a lot that makes you sleep well at night when you look at that linebacking depth chart and say, okay, these are the guys we're going to go to war with every Sunday. I would also throw cornerback in the mix for the same reason, because Charles Tillman is now gone. Tim Jennings, how much does he have left, and how does he fit in a Fangio defense where Vic Fangio likes the bigger, rangier corners who can be more physical? And Tim Jennings obviously wasn't comfortable a year ago moving inside and playing the nickel. So now you've got a need there opposite of Kyle Fuller, and what do you do there? So I think linebacker, cornerback, and then, as you mentioned, the defensive line are 3 things to really zero in on, maybe not at 7, but throughout the rest of that draft.
And let's not forget safety, too, fellas. It's arguably their thinnest position, because they only have 3 of them right now in the roster. Their projected starters, Ryan Money and Antoine Roll, and Brock Vereen, a draft pick last year. He actually may be better in the nickelback situation or that role for the Bears. So that's a very thin position. And if you look at what Fangio has done with his safeties in San Francisco. These guys were all Pro Bowl players, and you know they do a lot of different things. So they need help, really, at every single defensive level. So I think all of those concerns outweigh maybe drafting a receiver at 7.
And I'll agree with you on that safety spot. I just think the difficult thing there is it's just a bad year to have the number 7th overall pick when you're trying to find a safety. You know, offensively, so much talk about a wide receiver, and I think it is possible that from what we know, the guys they've brought in, Kevin White, Amari Cooper, the people they've talked to in this draft, that it's possible they go with a wide receiver early on. However, I wouldn't ignore it. I'm not saying do the 7th overall. I think they're one offensive lineman away, too, from having a pretty decent offensive line. It took a step back last year, but you had some injuries. I just think they need to grab one more guy. And it would surprise me if they took a guy like Brandon Scherff at 7th overall. But that is a guy who I think is going to be a phenomenal guard in the league for a long time. And maybe that would allow you to take Kyle Long and put him on the at right tackle and sort of fix that offensive line. I know that's a move a lot of people don't want to do because, hey, he's been a Pro Bowl right guard for 2 years. Why would you want to move that? And I agree. So if you do that, you better have the replacement. And that's why I think Brandon could be that replacement. And all of a sudden, you plug in that 5th guy, you have a pretty decent line.
But what about the defensive line, I would say? Because right now, who are your starters? These two free agent pickups at defensive end, you know, Ray McDonald and Jarvis Jenkins, who are free agents for various reasons. And you got Jeremiah Ratliff at nose tackle. So I know it's a cliche to say, but everything starts in the trenches. And they have pieces on the offensive line. And the defensive line, look, I know you can move Lamar Houston and Pramell McPhee up on the defensive line in certain situations, but they are so thin there. I mean, John Fox doesn't know what he has, and Eagle Ferguson or Will Sutton. Will Sutton probably doesn't even fit. So going back to Kevin's original point, that defensive line just needs so much help right now.
And that's why, you know, Adam, you mentioned it, that there's an option here, potentially, if a team wants to come up and get somebody at 7, you could potentially dangle that pick and trade back and accumulate some more picks just because you do need so much help. So we're going to talk about the number 7 pick, and we have talked about it since January, and it may come down to a situation where they don't have it by the end of the night on the first night of the draft, and all that talk we had about it went for naught, which is how often things go with the draft.
And if I remember correctly, last year when the Bears picked at 14, Kyle Fuller was a little bit of a surprise. But we were able to kind of think of about 5 or 6 players that we were pretty certain the Bears were going to take. Nobody really expected a trade last year. Now, part of that was we knew Phil Emery. We had at least an idea. He was still going to surprise you, but we had an idea of Brian Pace. I mean, he's the unknown here. You can look at what the Saints have done. You can look at players he's scouted. You can look at everything he's said to us and parcel every word. But we really don't know what a guy like Ryan Pace is going to do in this spot. But what's kind of funny about this is we've talked about all these positions, and I think that tells us that they could pick any of those positions. It wouldn't really be surprising. I mean, you can't – maybe tight end you can throw out for a first-round pick. And I know Adam mentioned safety. You're not going to take one at 7, but you could easily trade down in the first round and get one. I know we'll probably talk about quarterback at some point. Adam mentioned running back. Any of these positions would make sense.
One of the questions we got on Twitter, this was from @ShySportUpdates, asked us, do you think the Bears will draft a running back this year? Certainly wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't at all, and it would, depending on how high they draft one, because there will be a good one there when the second round comes up and the Bears' second pick comes up. That may tell you where they're going with Matt Forte. We all know he wants a new contract. We all know he's at the wrong age level for his career, but he's still been relatively productive.
Do you think he'll be at minicamp?
No.
The voluntary one?
I really don't. I think he's going to be adamant in his stance to try to get that new deal. I think it's important that he's there because you got a new staff. Got a whole new offensive system being put in place, and he's supposed to be one of the leaders of the team. But getting back to the original Twitter question there is if the Bears see a good running back there in the second round, and they take him, I mean, the writing could be on the wall for Matt Forte.
It's a decent class of running backs. Obviously, we saw the last couple of years where it wasn't as good, and no running backs were taken in the first round. You're going to get the top two backs, obviously, are Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon, and those guys probably will not be within the Bears' reach, given what they want to do. But the Forte thing is sort of the asterisk that hangs over everything, because he is in the final year of his contract. It makes zero sense for Ryan Pace to go ahead and extend him, not only because of his age, but because we have zero idea how he fits into the Adam Gase offense. And so There is nothing to gain for the Bears as an organization in extending Matt Forte other than to keep Matt Forte happy. They have to figure out how he fits, how much he has left in the tank, and I don't think you can do that without playing a season out. And so that's going to be sort of the drama that surrounds all this. And with that in mind, now all of a sudden you start looking at succession plans and eyeing this draft class for guys that fit.
Are you guys ignoring Kadeem Carey as the potential heir apparent here?
A little
Matt
bit.
Forte?
Yes, I am.
Well, I agree with these guys. And I what Dan just – Matt Forte just doesn't have any leverage in this situation. But I understand what he's doing. This is why it's so hard to predict. I was looking back at the Broncos last year. Their best running back was C.J. Anderson, undrafted guy. So you're thinking, okay, well, maybe Adam Gase and John Fox realized they could find a running back anywhere. But then you look back and, you know, they drafted Monty Ball in the second round. They drafted Ronnie Hillman in the third round. You look at Ryan Pace with the Saints. They drafted Mark Ingram. So these guys have had experiences both ways where they've gone after a running back early in drafts, and sometimes those guys have panned down. They've also found them later on. So it just makes it such a mystery about it. It's hard to project what these guys want out of some of these positions.
I don't think they've had for their use for multiple backs at their, you know, in New Orleans and Carolina and in Denver. Matt Forte, to me, this may just be my opinion, he's clearly the best running back they've ever had on their roster. He could do so many different things. I mean, he literally never left the field for Mark Trestman, and that's probably good and bad, but he's better than anything they've ever used before, and they could actually rely on him. John Fox said at the owners' meetings that they want to rely on him. Now, whether Matt Forte shows up and they can start game planning with him is another question.
Another offensive position. And by the way, that's Adam Johns, Dan Weeder here, and Kevin Fishbane as well. I'm Adam Hoge. This is WGN's NFL Draft Roundtable. Another offensive position that the Bears have done a good amount of homework on, even though it seems like a long shot they might end up with one of these guys, but that's the quarterback spot. And this year, there's clearly two quarterbacks better than the rest, and in fact, the rest of them might be awful and not even worth taking. And I certainly, in my evaluation of these guys, I wouldn't touch any of the other quarterbacks before the fourth round. But you have Jameis Winston, and you have Marcus Mariota. Mariota probably seems a little bit more realistic for the Bears, if it's even a possibility. They did bring both of these guys in. They've done the homework. Do you think there's any chance either of them ends up with the Bears?
I think it's very slim. I mean, you talk to any of these pundits or even just ask a couple of the folks around the league, I'm sure you guys are hearing the same. They're probably going to go 1-2. Mariota's probably not going to the Titans. Somebody maybe leaps up and grabs him there. But I'd be very surprised if one of them falls to number 7. Look, the Bears have to do their due diligence, especially with Mariota, you know, being such a scheme-driven, successful quarterback at Oregon and just all the off-the-field issues with Jameis Winston. So you got to do your due diligence on these guys. But I just can't see any scenario. And I know you got to prepare for them, but I don't see any scenario where they drop to 7.
Yeah, I don't see either of these guys falling to number 7. And there's some intrigue there. And I think maybe earlier in the process there was some question with Mariota. Would teams pass on him just because they were a little bit worried about how his skill set would translate from the system he ran at Oregon to the NFL? But I think the further along you've gotten into it and the more you hear around the league from people who dive into what this kid's made of and how quickly he learns and how much he's willing to put in the time, those concerns have lessened dramatically since January. And so I think those two guys are going at the top of the draft. And at that point, you just let them go. And you say your thanks that those other positions that we mentioned earlier are going to have all their top players still there.
Yeah, if they didn't have to trade up for him, as these guys are saying, I could see it. Here's the kind of the weird wild card. We've all seen the quote. We've all heard Ryan Pace say it. We know how he feels about drafting a quarterback. He wants to take a swing every chance he gets. This is a tough draft to do that, though, because, you know, are you going to take some of these guys are going to go in the second round, like a Garrett Grayson or Brett Hundley, just because of the need at the position. If you're Ryan Pace, not only do you want to try to draft a quarterback every year, you want to find a franchise quarterback. Ryan Pace's goal is to find the franchise quarterback. Complete hypothetical, but what if he thinks Marcus Mariota is a franchise quarterback? That's kind of the big, and that would be the only reason they move up. But if you're someone who's following this team, you have to, I don't want to say you have to trust Ryan Pace, but you have to understand that he wants to find that guy that's going to bring the Bears to a Super Bowl. We know he doesn't think it's, we shouldn't say we know, we expect he doesn't think it's Jay Cutler. What if he thinks it's someone in this draft and that someone would have to probably be Mariota or Winston?
It's the cost.
That's where it goes back
to. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You don't have the currency. You don't have enough draft picks. You don't have 10 picks going in this draft where you have sort of that wiggle room to leverage some things. You have 6 picks, and the cost of moving up is just, it's too great with all the other needs we mentioned.
It has to include Jay Cutler, and I just don't see that happening. We already went through this a month or so ago when you could have traded Cutler if someone was out there willing to pay what you wanted for. I don't see anyone taking Cutler off your hands. For instance, that rumor out there with the Titans, they're not going to trade the second pick for Jay Cutler.
Right.
It's just that's not good enough value.
If you're an NFL GM and you have a to-do list, one of the things that is never on your to-do list is to get an inconsistent quarterback with a gigantic contract. Those are two things that you don't do if you want job security.
And it doesn't necessarily make the Bears better if they trade. I mean, we've been around George McCaskey, Ted Phillips, Ryan Pace. As much as people say the word rebuild, these guys expect to compete this year. They want to compete, and what their probably best chance to compete is having Jay Cutler at quarterback.
The going rate, so what are they saying for that second pick? Is like the RG3 trade
just
from
insane.
Washington.
Was
that three first-round picks?
And a second.
A second-round pick. Yep. You mentioned the rebuild, and look, the Bears clearly aren't saying that word. They don't want to do that, but let's face it, they are. They need picks, and to sacrifice three first-round picks and a second-round pick to get one player who's not really a sure thing. This isn't Andrew Luck or even RG3 they would be trading up for.
Well, I would argue that they're already feeling the effects of the two first-rounders they traded away for Jay Cutler. I think that's still having an effect on this team and some of the deficiencies they have across the roster and some of the depth issues. Let me ask you guys about Jameis Winston, who seemingly has all the talent in the world to be good in the NFL, but has all these other off-the-field issues. I have been very vocal since going back to the start of last season that I would not touch this guy, and I'm still going into the draft with that thinking. And also, I don't think the gap between him and Marcus Mariota is as big as some think, and I honestly think Mariota might end up being the better quarterback in the long term. If they're lining up and playing this Sunday, Winston's ready right now. I'm not sure Mariota is. But would you guys even draft Jameis Winston?
I wouldn't touch him. I think it's kind of surprising that, or I love the storyline, I should say, that Lovie Smith is probably going to draft a guy like this, a guy who had so many problems with quarterbacks here, who he's going to draft a guy with so many lingering issues off the field. Look, he's been so impressive in his meetings at the whiteboard, the chalkboard, whatever you want to call it. He's got good film. You could break down his interceptions however you want. He can be an impressive player on the field, but all of it, off-the-field stuff that continues to linger and swirl around him. I mean, he's just getting sued recently. I mean, this kid, I wouldn't touch him. I'll be honest. I wouldn't touch him.
Well, and because of the spotlight on all these things that we've mentioned, it's only going to be magnified when you get to the NFL and you have round-the-clock coverage of every move you make, every pass you throw, every bar you visit, every grocery store you go into. That's a lot for a kid whose own lawyer has said he has maturity issues right now to digest and take on. I understand why a team like the Buccaneers are going to take a Jameis Winston if they can. He's a great talent. He's very smart. He does some things that are pretty impressive to see as a quarterback. But we know as well as anybody in Chicago how important intangibles are to this position. We know for too long the chatter of, oh, this is a quarterback with all the talent. He just doesn't have that one thing that really rallies the guys around him. So that's the question you have to answer with Jameis Winston. Can he make himself better? Can he make the team around him better? Is he mature enough to be the focal point, the leader, the guy that energizes everything within your building? And right now, I would be very, very scared to do that.
I would not draft him. I've read enough about what happened to not want someone like that in my locker room. But if there's one thing we all know about NFL GMs and head coaches, there's a lot of egos going on. These guys, Lovie Smith and Jason Light, are sitting there. They're looking at the way he throws the ball and think, hey, we can keep him under wraps. We can keep him from having a Johnny Manziel episode. Remember last year, Johnny Manziel said all the right things leading up to the draft too, and look where he is. So Lovie Smith, these guys think if they can take a guy, they all look. Phil Emery thought it with Brandon Marshall. So did Mark Trestman. I mean, these guys always think they could be the ones to turn a player around. I will say this, Dan. I actually think Jameis Winston, I don't question his leadership at all. I think what the problem is going to be the immaturity, and if he does anything off the field, how does that affect his leadership? And let me change it. I didn't question his leadership in college. You talk to some of those guys, you listen to him talk, he could rally his troops. But how is that going to work in a pro locker room? That
right.
kind of
where you're
going to
lose. This guy lost one game in college, yep. Okay, and it was his last game. This isn't Florida State. You're going to go into an NFL locker room. You're probably going to get drafted by a team that's going to lose a lot of games next year. This whole shtick he has at week in and week out and his personality, I think it looks good in these interviews and these NFL draft shows as we lead up to this thing. But how much is it going to is he going to wear out his welcome very quickly when all of a sudden the Buccaneers are 0-3 next year?
Well, and Florida State built a fortress of solitude around him for these off-the-field issues. They didn't, you know, they didn't take him as seriously as the tsunami of media attention that's going to come at him at the NFL level. And as Adam mentions, the losing, that's a lot of things that come at you. And I don't talk about just the ability to energize your teammates at practice. It's the ability to do things right, both when you're in the facility and when you're gone. And as soon as you start doing some things wrong off the field, you lose respect really quickly in this league.
There's some Cam Newton going on here too, guys, because I think when coming into the draft, everyone knew he was going to be the number one pick. He had all the talents, but there was a lot of questions about his maturity. He said all the right things, and he could not handle losing that first year, and he admitted going into his second season how immature he was as a rookie. And you know, Cam Newton hasn't had any issues off the field since he's joined the league, but look, the Panthers have made the playoffs twice, but is it because of Cam Newton? Has he really elevated himself to be a premier quarterback? No. So there's some different comparisons you can make to make you be really nervous about Jameis Winston.
Let's also point this out. Lovie Smith does not have a great track record of solidifying his offensive coordinator position. Last year, they didn't even have one for the whole season. So that's another thing. You have to have a system around the guy.
Are there any quarterbacks later in the draft that you think the Bears should use a pick on?
Now, I know you mentioned Garrett Grayson, and I've actually started to hear some pretty good things about him, whether it's pundits or some folks around the league. I think he's maybe solidly the number three quarterback, probably goes in the second round. So if you're Ryan Pace and you're considering finding that next franchise quarterback, could it be him? Maybe. Again, there's this quarterback class has been widely criticized and scrutinized for good reason. It's a weak class for a lot of good reasons, but he's starting to generate some pretty good buzz, Garrett Grayson.
I have some intrigue in Bryce Petty, depending on how long he lasts. If he's there late on day two, early on day three, and you feel like you have the patience to allow him to develop, to use this year as a redshirt year if you have Cutler starting, and you have a chance to sort of dig in with him and polish up some of the things that he doesn't have right now from an NFL skill set level, there's something there. The kid throws a really nice ball. He's got a great arm, and he can light it up when he's in a rhythm. And so depending on where you can get him, I think there's some value there. And if you're Ryan Pace and you just want to take that swing, like you said you would do, and just try to find a quarterback that maybe, just maybe, is the answer, that's a guy that it piques my interest a little bit.
And that's the luxury of having Jay Cutler, is you can draft one of these guys and give him that redshirt year. You can give him two redshirt years if this regime likes Jay Cutler and wants to keep him for 2016. I think Petty and Grayson are good. You know, Sean Mannion, I didn't love him at the Senior Bowl, but there's a guy with, you know, the frame and the arm strength to develop into something. You know, we talked at the Senior Bowl about Brian Bennett, the kid who was Mariota's backup at Oregon, really athletic, and you're just kind of looking for these guys with have enough tools that if you spend a year with Adam Gase and John Fox and Dow Logan's the quarterback coach, that they can find a way to develop these guys and see what happens. The thing that I'm worried about with Garrett Grayson, for example, or even Bryce Petty, how high are these guys going to end up going? Because I don't think any of us would put a grade on these players above the fourth round. But we all know how these drafts work out. Yeah. There's a chance these guys are going to go in the second.
Teams get quarterback desperate. Yep. And, I mean, you could say the same applies to Winston and Mariota. Teams need to find their franchise quarterback, and you're willing to take risk to try to find it and get them.
I just think of the 2011 draft where you had Gabbert, Ponder, and Locker. And look how that worked out for those three teams. The desperation creeps in and makes you do some crazy things.
Kevin, you brought up a good point. This could be a two-year plan for Jay Cutler here. I don't think many fans realize it. They think he's, you know, one and done here under Adam Gase. There's quite a possibility here that, one, he does pretty well under Adam Gase, and two, that Ryan Pace doesn't do what he says he wants to do, and he passes on all quarterbacks, and he waits to next year's draft to find his next franchise quarterback.
And there could be better quarterbacks next draft, too. I mean, as we've talked about, this is one of the worst quarterback drafts in recent memory. So I know Ryan Pace wants to take a swing, but you know he doesn't have to, and he's got enough needs on the board to go find players in other rounds. Like you don't. I don't know if you're not going to take him in the first round, then you're taking someone who's a developmental player. Do you want to waste a third round pick on a Bryce Petty when you can go take an outside linebacker in that spot?
I'll say this for Ryan Pace: we're going to obviously hold him to those words. Oh, I want to draft a quarterback. I want to get a quarterback every year. He's not going to force the issue, and I think we have to keep what he said in context. And essentially, the context there is: if you don't believe you have the long-term answer in your building, then you keep overturning every stone until you can find him. And so he's going to try to swing, but he's not going to force the issue just because he said that he would.
Garrett Grayson's the only guy I saw at the Senior Bowl that looks like he could start an NFL game at some point. And even there, I don't think it's a for sure thing. So again, I'm not using a pick earlier than the fourth round on any of those guys that are not named Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. And with all those needs we talked about earlier in this show, I don't think you can blow a second or third round pick on a quarterback. I think you got to look at other positions on your depth chart. Let's look at sort of a grander picture with the NFL draft. You guys have all been covering this thing since January and have gone through written stories on some of these prospects and some of the storylines that are out there going into this thing. What are some of the stories that our listeners need to know about going into the draft?
I like the Todd Gurley story, just especially now, and Dan can probably talk to this, especially with what's going on in Minnesota with Adrian Peterson. I mean, Gurley is just a dynamic player. Yeah, you got to make sure his knee's okay, but I don't think that the death of the running back position is true at all. If you get a workhorse and somebody that explosive, somebody so unique like Gurley, I mean, he could go pretty high. And you just look at the Vikings situation with his agent apparently on Facebook, you know, putting pictures out there with Tampa Bay Buccaneers hats and stuff like that, and the Peterson jersey in the background. I think it's a very unique storyline building up to the draft.
Well, Ben Dagra, Adrian Peterson's agent, is certainly an eccentric guy at times. And I think special is special, and no matter what position that's at, if the running back position has been devalued, but you still find a guy that you think is a perennial Pro Bowl-type player, you go ahead and swing at him. And it's an interesting case because when he's healthy, that kid is as electric of a running back as you'll find in the college game. He runs through people. He runs around people. He runs over people. Runs past people.
He runs like Adrian Peterson.
And you know, it's pretty impressive to watch when he's going. And so it'll be interesting to see just where he falls on this board and who has that need good enough. And, hey, we'll get to pick him somewhere in this mock draft that we've got coming up.
Well, Jamal Lewis and Willis McGahee had knee issues in college, and they were high picks, and they were pretty good NFL players for, you know, not for a long time because that's just the nature of the position. But I absolutely think I'd be really curious to see if a team in the top 10 takes Todd Gurley. If his knee checked out, which reportedly it did, I mean, look at the Seahawks. Look at Marshawn Lynch and what he's meant to that team. And even the Patriots did not have that one guy, but they ran the ball a ton last year in the playoffs in the regular season to get to where they needed to be. If you have that player, hey, Matt Forte was the most important player on the Bears last year. And maybe even the year before that, you could argue. So I think Gurley is really interesting just because he has top 10 talent at a position that hasn't been drafted in the first round in 2 years now.
Go ahead.
Another position that I think it's intriguing to me because Brandon Marshall was here for, you know, for a couple of years, and he was such a strong presence. You know, he kind of like dominated conversation whenever he was at the podium or wasn't at the podium, whether he was yelling at us or his teammates in the locker room. He was just such a strong personality. It's another deep year for receivers. The Bears clearly need one. And at least from a local perspective, the Bears think this is a very deep class. They've said so on record. I wonder how long they're willing to wait to find that replacement for Brandon Marshall.
That's a good question, and I think you hear across the league how impressive this class is at receiver. There's probably more than three dozen, upwards of 40 guys who might be drafted next week. That's a lot of wide receivers that are going to come off the board. And you kind of have to monitor, not only as day one goes along, but early on day two, where does the run start? And at what point are you comfortable losing out on the first tier, the second tier, the third tier, because you say, oh, this is a deep class, we can get someone later? You got to really monitor what's happening elsewhere on the board, because all of a sudden, you know, you may have five or six guys come off between picks that you thought might be there for you at your next pick. Those runs can be scary in the war room on draft weekend. And so the Bears monitoring that run, the first run and the second run at wide receiver, is going to be very interesting.
And that's exactly why that works for the argument on why they should not take Amari Cooper or Kevin White at 7, because they can get a very good wide receiver at 39, maybe even the third round. They could trade back up at some point to get one. And I think, too, GMs are going to look at what the wide receivers did last year. You look at Mike Evans, Odell Beckham, Brandon Cooks before he got hurt, Sammy Watkins. I mean, they were rookie wide receivers. It was a historic year for them last season. And they say this class might even be better. And if you're a general manager, you're a head coach, you see, okay, it's pretty easy for some of these wide receivers to make that transition and be an electric player as a rookie. And a GM's going to want to take that guy.
There's a couple of good offensive line stories. One that's probably a little bit more familiar locally is Lakin Tomlinson, the offensive lineman out of Duke, who grew up here in Rogers Park and took the train down every day to Lane Tech at 5 in the morning to get in and do his strength work. Just in a coincidence, my dad happens to bowl with his strength coach at Lane Tech, so he sort of told me the background story there and just sort of how really – and you guys have all talked to him too – just the discipline this kid had to get good grades, play football, build up his strength and his football ability to go on to Duke and continue both academically and on the football field. And heck, he could be a late first round pick, maybe more likely in the second. But you know, if there's a team late in the first round that likes him, who knows?
Yeah, he's going to be at the draft. He was invited to attend, so he's going to be there day one. Probably, you know, he could be off the board before day two. Such a unique story, especially Chicago. It's a great local story. He's got a teammate in the draft, which is crazy, from Lane Tech. I mean, the Chicago Catholic League and the Western Suburbs are the football base of the city, the public league, the Chicago Public League is all about basketball, but to have two kids from Lane Tech, Lakin Tomlinson and Louis Trinkpasat, the defensive tackle from Iowa, who could be a late round pick, it's pretty unique, pretty good story.
Tomlinson's a smart kid. He's got a very unique energy about him, kind of a contagious energy when you talk to him, and he's an ambitious kid, and obviously was part of a pretty impressive resurgence of the Duke football program, which came out of nowhere down there on Tobacco Road, and so it'll be interesting to see where he goes. Obviously he's got some work to do, but you know, a guard that can fill a need for somebody with some interior line help, you know, like you said, either late in day one or maybe towards the earlier middle portion of round two.
He'll be the first Duke player drafted in the first three rounds in 16 years. It says a lot about what David Cutcliffe's done with that program, because there's going to be, I think, four Duke players drafted. The most interesting thing to me about Lakin Tomlinson from talking to me, he wants to be a doctor in Jamaica after his career's over, and he was pre-med in college, and I kind of kept pressing him a little bit after what happened with Chris Borland. You know, and people did this at the Combine, too, and they said, you actually know all this stuff. You've studied this in class, and you're still out here playing. And, you know, I'm sure the GMs love it that he keeps saying it. He says, I want to play football. I love to play football. I love to compete, and I could be a doctor after football.
And he was born in Jamaica, so that's where the Jamaican connection comes in there. Another guy, and we'll move on to the mock draft here in a second, but another guy, another story, like another offensive lineman is Ali Marpet, who played at a school called Hobart and William Smith, a Division III school, but and he's got a chance to be the earliest D3 pick ever in this draft. And we saw him at the Senior Bowl, and the guy, he looked like he belonged right away. Here you're talking about the Senior Bowl, where even guys that are going to Florida State and Auburn or Alabama or whatever are taking up a step in class because they can't pick on the guy who's not going to the NFL. They're consistently going up against someone who's probably going to get drafted down there in those practices. So here you got have a guy from a D3 school totally stepping up in class and impressed everybody to the point where, heck, he could be a second or third round pick.
The Hobart pipeline continues, right? Right from the Hobart to the league. He was also very impressive at the combine and did a lot of things athletically that I think turned some heads and opened some eyes and puts him in position to be an earlier pick than anyone would have imagined 6 months ago.
We all know Kyle Long's rise was at the Senior Bowl. That's where he won over Phil Emery, and then he had, you know, just continued there. You have performances like that, and you could be kind of a fast riser and it fits the bill.
All right, so let's move on to our actual roundtable mock draft. I assigned eight teams to all of you guys, so we all of us have eight teams. We'll go in order and sort of simulate this thing and see how it plays out.
How much time between picks?
10 minutes. We're going to be here for a while. No, we'll try to do this quickly and go through it as fast as possible. And Kevin, you are awarded with the first overall pick in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
It was because you were so bad last year.
Well, I got to go into the mind of Lovie Smith, and Jameis Winston is our quarterback.
Wow.
I wouldn't be that surprised, honestly, if it took Mariota at this point, because there have been some, you know.
Doesn't Mariota seem more like a Lovie guy? I don't know what I'm basing off of, just from covering him here, but it just...
I just want to be able to be nice in the room and watch like Lovie and Jameis Winston have a conversation. I mean, from those of us who knew Lovie here, it's just kind of be, it's just an interesting dynamic. But everything you read, everything you hear, And it could be a giant smokescreen from Tampa Bay, and then they go up and take Mariota or Leonard Williams. But as of now, there's no reason for me to think that they're not going to take Jameis Winston.
Dan, before you make your pick, again, I love the Lovey storyline and Jameis Winston. You know, Lovey was a father figure to so many players here in Chicago. They still revere him as that. To see him take on this player who has had so many issues off the field and so many things, you know, circling around him, I think it's just going to be a unique story. If you're right there, Coach.
Yeah, so Jameis Winston comes off the board first. I don't think that would surprise anybody. He goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Dan, you have the second pick, and this is, I think, where things will really get interesting. On draft night, it's the Tennessee Titans.
Well, I don't have any trade suitors right now, so I'm just going to go ahead and take Marcus Mariota. He wins. His teammates love him. He's an energetic guy. He's a guy that has a lot of intangibles that are going to lift your team. And so let's not overthink it. Let's get him in our building, and let's go to work from there.
All right, so that takes the two quarterbacks off the board right away. Don't think that would surprise anyone. Maybe there'll be a trade there with the second pick, but either way, the good chance both quarterbacks are gone. Adam, you have the third pick in the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I think the Jaguars would run to the table, the podium, the check-in desk, whatever it is, and they would select Leonard Williams, the defensive end, defensive tackle from USC. Everybody thinks he may be the best player in the draft. Look, the quarterbacks are going to go higher because it's the quarterbacks, but just in terms of the best overall player like we were talking about earlier, this is it.
I think Williams would be a great pick also for Oakland at number four, which is my pick. He was the guy had number one on their draft board. But with him gone, I'm moving the wide receiver because I think they need to get Derek Carr, somebody to actually throw the football to. And I like Amari Cooper, I like Kevin White, but I like Cooper just a little bit more. So with the fourth pick, the Raiders are taking Amari Cooper, which means, Kevin, you are back on the clock at number five with the Washington Redskins.
Washington's weird because of Dan Snyder and his meddling. But I'll
keep
it.
You have to pretend. You got to get in that mentality.
Exactly. I'm pretending to keep him out of the draft room. No more Brian Arakpo. Ryan Kerrigan's a great player. You get another pass rusher. I think the best edge rusher in this draft is still on the board, and you take Dante Fowler at this point. If he falls to five, I think they'd have to take him.
All right, so Dante Fowler, guy who many think could be the best edge rusher, maybe a little scheme versatile, can go into different fronts, but certainly makes sense in Washington. He comes off the board that now two picks away from the Bears.
Uh-oh.
And it's all up to the New York Jets. And Dan, you get to you have the great pleasure of being GM of the New York Jets. Well, congratulations.
I'm happy to have Brandon Marshall in my building again. It's good to see him again. And
I'm sure he's happy to see you.
And I think that we've got needs for an edge rusher as well. And I'm a little bit disappointed that Fowler's off the board there, but there's plenty of talent left at the position. And I'm going to go ahead with a defensive-minded head coach and swing for Vic Beasley and get us some pass rush help there.
All right, Vic Beasley. So a little run on these edge rushers who could be in play for the Bears, but that leaves a couple of their top options still on the board at number seven. Adam, you have the Bears pick.
This is a tough one because I didn't really want the Bears pick here.
I thought I was doing you a favor by giving you the Bears pick.
I really think that they lean towards defense, and maybe this is where they start shaking up, and this maybe is the first surprise. So I'm going to say it. They pass on Kevin White, and this may be earlier than many people project, but I think the Bears do like him. They take defensive tackle Danny Shelton out of Washington.
I'll let everyone react to that since it is the Bears pick.
Terrible pick.
I like Shelton. I think he's fine at number seven. I know some think that that's overdrafting him, but I think especially for what the Bears need and switching this 3-4, he's as good as you can do at this point.
I'm kind of curious. A lot of people dinged him at the combine because he had, the lowest 40 time ever. But, you know, he's a defensive tackle. He's not going to be running a 40-yard dash. And you watch him and you don't see a 5.6 whatever 40 because he's not running 40 yards. You see an extremely athletic player, and what really impressed me, he didn't leave the field very often for Washington. I mean, he's always out there. Great durability, great strength. And when you have somebody that talented, Vic Fangio will find a spot for him. And I think that's a fine pick. But I will say I am curious to see how the auditorium reacts. Yeah, we always wonder. Yeah. We always like the Jets fans and the Giants fans, what they do. Here it is in Chicago. How will the Bears fans react?
So I get to go to Polynesia, I think, to find out more about Danny Shelton's childhood and his life growing up, right, now that you picked him to the Bears. It's a good pick there. I would listen to the phones before picking Danny Shelton at 7 and see if maybe we could swing back 2, 3, 4, 5 picks and get him later and procure a pick for later in the draft.
Yeah, I think with Kevin White on the board, I think Ryan Pace's phone will be going off quite a bit because there's a lot of teams that need receivers behind the Bears. I know it's a deep class, but Kevin White's right there with Amari Cooper. There's going to be teams calling for him.
So with Shelton off the board at number 7, that moves us to number 8, Atlanta, with a new head coach in Dan Quinn. And how similar will he try to make that defense to what he was running up in Seattle? Here's a guy who I think fits really well in a Dan Quinn defense, and that's Shane Ray, the defensive end, sort of an edge rusher. I think he's versatile, can be used in multiple ways, and I think that's why he's perfect for that defense. I think that Dan Quinn will get the best out of him. So I got Shane Ray going 8th to the Atlanta Falcons.
For the record, for the Bears, I had circled Cooper, Ray, and Shelton as the three guys that I wanted to have a choice of at 7.
Yeah, I think that Ray would make a lot of sense in Chicago as well. So moving on to number 9, it's the New York Giants. And Kevin?
You know, Adam, my Giants, we have a lot of needs. I was looking at their roster earlier. I was like, wow, this is not a very good roster right now. But I think you got to bolster that offensive line for Eli Manning. Brandon Scherff, you know, some people have said he's the second best or first best offensive lineman. I just like that you can take him and play him at guard or tackle depending on what fits you best. So I'm going to go Brandon Scherff to the New York Giants.
Okay, I think that kid's the best offensive lineman in this draft. I don't think he's a left tackle. I'm not even sure he's a right tackle. Maybe you try him there, but I think he's going to be a really, really good guard in the NFL for a long time. I think more teams are realizing how important that is. I mean, haven't we realized that here in Chicago with Kyle Long? That even though you're drafting the guy that everyone says, oh, he could be a left tackle, he's playing guard really well.
What do they talk about? The integrity of the pocket? And right. We've seen Sue just dominate the Bears' offensive line for so many years here. Now he's gone. You know, to have those guards in that center to be able to solidify the interior of that offensive line is very important, especially with this evolution of these really great defensive tackles nowadays.
Well, Jay Cutler's best friend Aaron Cromer told us last year about how the guard position had become more valued because you have these three techniques all over the league that teams are using, and you know, Gerald McCoy, Tampa Bay, you mentioned Sue, and you're finding some of these guys in the draft now, and you got to have a good guard play.
All right, let's move on to number 10. It's St. Louis Rams. Dan, you have the pick.
I was targeting help for my secondary initially, but Kevin White is still here, and he's too intriguing of a playmaker for an offense that needs a spark to pass on here. And so at number 10, I'm going to put Kevin White there, and I'm going to pump my fist a little bit if I'm Jeff Fisher.
All right, so Kevin White still slips into the top 10. And let's review the first 10 picks real quick here before we move on. Going first overall was Jameis Winston, no surprise. Second overall to Tennessee, Marcus Mariota. Number 3, Jacksonville gets Leonard Williams. Number 4, the Oakland Raiders take Amari Cooper. At number 5, Washington takes Dante Fowler. The New York Jets at number 6 draft Vic Beasley. The run on defensive players continues with Danny Shelton to the Chicago Bears at number 7. At number 8, it's Shane Ray. And then going back to offense at number 9, the New York Giants take Brandon Scherff. And the St. Louis Rams take the wide receiver Kevin White, who slipped a little bit there in our top 10. All right, so we're moving on to number 11, the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC North. And Adam Johns, you have the pick.
You know, it's with Todd Gurley sitting there, I don't think they're taking him. I think maybe things do work out with Adrian Peterson, and I think the Vikings, for whatever reason, are scared to invest in a running back with a knee problem. I think they go defense, and they take the cornerback out of Michigan State, Trey Waynes.
Oh, Trey Waynes. That would be a little early for him maybe, but I think it makes a lot of sense. So, and Trey's a really good player, and he's got sort of that length and size that a lot of teams covet at that corner position. So he goes to Minnesota, will make Jay Cutler's life a little bit harder within the division,
I'm sure.
They've
got another first-round corner from a couple years ago in Xavier Rhodes. They put those side by side. That's a pretty good look.
That gets us to the always fun on draft day, Cleveland Browns. And I get to have the honor of screwing up their draft this year. And going at number 12, Look, if they could somehow get Marcus Mariota, I think that's best case scenario. But without a trade, it's probably not going to happen at number 12. I think they got to go wide receiver then with Cooper and White already off the board. That leads me to Devontae Parker next up among the wide receivers. So I'm going with Devontae Parker at number 12 to the Cleveland Browns. At number 13, the New Orleans Saints. Kevin?
Well, Adam, the New Orleans Saints were all ready to draft Devontae Parker. So that just increases that bitter rivalry between the Saints and the Browns. New Orleans needs pass rushers. They need to really fix that front seven. I know they went out and got Anthony Spencer this offseason, but he's at the later end of his career. Ray, Beasley, these guys off the board. I think someone's taking a chance on Randy Gregory in the first round. It's going to go ahead and be the New Orleans Saints. I think Sean Payne's the type of guy that looks at Gregory, thinks he's going to be a good player, thinks that could be the one that makes it work with Gregory.
All right, so Randy Gregory from Nebraska, who maybe a month ago was considered a top five pick, got a problem at the combine with getting busted for a drug test. Not the first time that's happened, won't be the last. It'll be interesting to see how far he slips, and in this particular draft he slipped to number 13. With the New Orleans Saints. That moves us on to the Miami Dolphins at number 14 and Dan Weeder.
Here's where I get a little excited because we need some help on offense. We talked a lot during the show about Todd Gurley. He's still there. Again, don't overthink it. Get the true playmaker and the special talent and go from there.
All right, so Todd Gurley goes 14th overall to the Miami Dolphins. Up next, San Francisco 49ers. They've had an interesting offseason.
Yes, we have. a lot of turnover. Harbaugh is gone. Fangio is now in Chicago, as we all know. And they saw two linebackers retire for different reasons. And so linebackers definitely high on their charts. But they need help up front. They're going to go to Oregon and pick. Let's see if I can pronounce this right. Eric Armstead.
Yeah.
A huge freak. Behemoth. Yeah, freak athlete. And they shore up their defensive line.
All right. Yeah, Eric Armstead reminds me a lot of Kyle Long, not just because he went to Oregon, but because he's a raw player, hasn't played a whole lot of football. Once he was playing basketball at Oregon, too, and once he kind of focused on football, he really took off last season. So I think he's got the best football ahead of him. And would be a good addition for the 49ers. Number 16, the Houston Texans. I think that they would love to have Todd Gurley, but he's off the board. So moving on to the next running back from the University of Wisconsin, Melvin Gordon.
That's a homer pick, Adam.
Yeah, the last time they picked a Badger, it worked out pretty well. J.J. Watt, a little different. Melvin Gordon going to the Texans at number 16. So at number 17, the San Diego Chargers and Kevin Fishbane.
Well, the Chargers were really hoping for Todd Gurley or Melvin Gordon at their pick. They need help at running back right now, heading with Brandon Oliver as their starter next year. They also need help on the defensive line. It's one of those drafts with a lot of defensive tackles you could take in the second half of the first round, which is where we were at. So they're going to take Malcolm Brown. Maybe a little bit of a reach, but Brown can play end or nose, maybe in a 30 front. They can kind of move him around a little bit. Very athletic guy. So Malcolm Brown out of Texas heads to San Diego.
All right, Malcolm Brown comes off the board. And at number 18, it's now the Kansas City Chiefs on the clock with Dan Weeder.
I'd like some help in my secondary, and I'm looking at the cornerback pool, and there hasn't been a run on this yet. Only Trey Wayne's off the board, so I'm going to take Kevin Johnson from Wake Forest and get some help on that back end of the defense.
All right, so Kevin Johnson goes off the board, and with the second first-round pick for the Cleveland Browns, Adam Johns has the call at number 19.
Wait, Cleveland switched GMs in the middle of a draft?
Yes.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Should we text each other? What do you want to do over there? Look, Cleveland's a mess. They're lucky to have two first-round picks. They need help in a lot of places. This is a deep receiving class. It really is, but they need that, whether it's Johnny Manziel or our old friend Josh McCown is there.
Keep in mind I took Parker.
Oh, yeah.
At 12.
Good point. So let's change that.
This would happen in the Cleveland Browns.
This was going to be tricky with the GM switching.
We're trying to be realistic here,
right? This is the perfect example of the Cleveland Browns dysfunction happening in this WGN studio right now. So they changed their pick dramatically at the last second.
Wow.
They decide to Bolster their offensive line and take Lyle Collins, offensive lineman, LSU.
Kevin Costner couldn't have said it better himself.
You're lucky because the Philadelphia Eagles were about to jump up there and steal a pick with all the dysfunction. You know, the clock ran out. They're ready to go. I have Philadelphia, and it's also been an interesting offseason for Chip Kelly and some of the things that have gone on there with the Eagles. And I think they have – well, they certainly have a lot of needs in their secondary, and I think that this would be a tough call here with Wayne's already off the board, with Landon Collins still available, and a guy I know Chip Kelly loves, in Ifo Ekpre-Olamu, one of his cornerbacks at Oregon.
Congratulations on pronouncing that.
Thank you. I've been working on that one for like
2 years.
He
wasn't even on my board because of the pronunciation.
He's just said, I'm out. As much as I think Chip likes his guy, I think Landon Collins at this point is a little too good to pass up on for somebody who just tore his ACL in December. So I'm going to take Landon Collins here to the Eagles at number 20. And that puts Kevin back on the clock at number 21 with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, the Bengals need a defensive back. And it's interesting when you look at them. They drafted Draker Patrick a couple years ago. Hasn't really worked out necessarily for them. But they also could use some help on offense. And I'm kind of surprised that Andres Pete is still on the board. And some consider him maybe the best offensive tackle in the draft out of Stanford. And you look at the Bengals, Whitworth on one side. How much longer has he got on that side of the line? I think best player available right now, they go ahead and take Andres Pete.
All right, so Andres Pete comes off the board, and that moves us to number 22, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Dan?
This is some of that draft night anxiety because the players that you were really targeting just go right in front of you. Landon Collins first, and then Andres Pete. I'm going to stick on the offensive line there and go ahead and get Eric Flowers from the University of Miami, the U, and stabilize my offensive line a little bit. Really wanted Landon Collins to fall to 22. He's not there. Got to go with plan B.
All right, next up, 23, the Detroit Lions. Adam?
As we talked about a little bit earlier, we all know Sue and also Fairley are now no longer Detroit Lions. So it's time to help that front. I know they got the Haloti Ngata, but they need more defensive linemen. It's best to have a rotation. So Detroit's got some good offensive pieces, so they go to the defensive line and select Eddie Goldman, defensive tackle, Florida State.
All right, so a little bit of a run here on offensive linemen. Oh, no, you said Goldman. Yeah,
yes,
you went defensive tackle.
Yeah, defensive
with
tackle.
Eddie Goldman. All right, so number 24, the Arizona Cardinals. Then I think that they would love to have one of those top two running backs, but with Gurley and Gordon off the board, I think they look to defense. They need a pass rusher, and Alvin Bud Dupree from Kentucky is still available. I think he's a good fit there in Arizona, so I'm going that route with the 24th pick to the Arizona Cardinals. And at number 25, the Carolina Panthers are on the board. Kevin?
Well, the Panthers are tempted to take a receiver in the first round for the second year in a row to give Cam Newton more weapons. But another thing Cam Newton could use is some protection. So they're going to take converted defensive lineman and now offensive tackle T.J. Clemmings out of Pittsburgh.
All right, so Clemmings off the board.
Character pick.
We love character.
For all the hype about Clemmings, I didn't think he looked that good at the Senior Bowl. But
raw.
A lot of people like his potential going forward. We'll speed up these last seven or so picks here as we finish up, and we're a little short on time here finishing up the NFL Draft Roundtable. So Dan at number 26 in the Baltimore Ravens.
I'll rush, turn my card in, and take Breshad Perriman, wide receiver, Central Florida.
All right, so Breshad Perriman comes off the board. A lot of potential there as well. A lot of people looking at the upside with Breshad Perriman. Number 27, the Dallas Cowboys, and Adam Johns.
Marcus Peters, cornerback, Washington.
Marcus Peters with some off-the-field issues, but still talented, and wouldn't be surprised to see him go in the first round. And Adam takes him number 27 to the Dallas Cowboys. All right, number 28, Denver Broncos. That's my pick, and still available, it looks like, is Cameron Irving, the now center from Florida State. He played left tackle up until midseason this year with the Seminoles. Then they kicked him inside. That looks like it's going to be his home. And they need a center now because Montgomery is now a Chicago Bear. and they need someone to fill in there. So going number 28 to the Denver Broncos is Cameron Irving. That brings us to number 29 in the Indianapolis Colts, Kevin.
And they need to protect Andrew Luck, so they go ahead and take DJ Humphreys, offensive tackle out of Florida.
All right, DJ Humphreys comes off the board. Green Bay Packers, Dan?
I want some help at linebacker. I go ahead and get Eric Kendricks from UCLA, playmaker, instinctive, guy who's going to be around the ball.
Good player, good inside linebacker, who I think would be a great pick. He somehow slipped to the second round of the Bears. Number 31, New Orleans Saints. Adam?
Still heartbroken over the loss of Ryan Pace. The Saints, they go offense. They need options for Drew Brees, and they go Philip Dorsett, the speedy receiver out of Miami. Mm-hmm.
Philip Dorsett goes in the first round, and they add another speedy wideout to the mix for the second straight year. That leaves the last pick in the first round, the New England Patriots. Maybe this is a homer pick. They need offensive line help. They need a guard. Lakin Tomlinson slips into the first round, goes with the last pick to the New England Patriots. Lakin Tomlinson from Rogers Park.
You just want the great local story.
It's a great story, right? And then he'll go win a Super Bowl next year.
So Bill Belichick is exactly thinking right now.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for coming in. We will have...
Wait, we're not doing rounds 2 through 7?
No, we're not. That's next week. We'll do the whole thing if you want to come back in, Dan. For Kevin Fishbane, Dan Weeder, and Adam Johns, I'm Adam Hoag. Thanks so much for joining us here for the WGN NFL Draft Roundtable. The draft is almost here. We're excited about it. Thanks for listening, and hope you enjoyed. Have a good day.